Bring the lights down low, it's time to show. Lights, camera, you know what we mean. Behold the magic of the silver screen. Some movies rock, some movies shock. They're powerful, all right. We cover them all on your favorite part. So many movies we can't choose. Even when you win, you lose. Life moves pretty fast. Some will fizzle and some movies last. I understood there would be no math. It's the 30-something movie podcast. Be excellent to each other. Peace out and word to your mother. They're from the best decades. Movie magic that never fades. Lightsabers clash, phasers set to stun. Action packed from dusk till dawn. We have deep thoughts and questions three. Share our love of the movies we see. Life moves pretty fast. Some will fizzle and some movies last. I understood there would be no math. It's the 30-something movie podcast. Be excellent to each other.
Bo, it's a 30-something movie podcast.
Woohoo!
That's a little sampling of a new possible intro song that I say I've been working on. Let's say my friend has been working on. He has an interesting name.
He's cool.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. You can basically ask him anything.
Very creative, that guy.
More creative than I am. Well, let's say this. More skilled in certain ways than I am.
Mm. You mean not tone deaf?
Correct. Yes. That's exactly what I mean. You know, when I had aspirations to be a rapper, my DJ name was DJ Monotone. You know, I mean, that kind of indicated that.
Sort of where you were headed.
Yeah, you know. That was a fellow teacher and I, one of my first years teaching, we'd write diss songs back and forth to each other from our classroom because we wanted to teach ourselves how to use GarageBand on the computers. So I was DJ Monotone and he was DJ Tanner, and we'd write songs back and forth to each other.
Oh, Lord.
That's some pretty good stuff. Most times it was just us describing what was on our desks. Wow. Riveting. Riveting stuff about staplers and pencils.
They took my stapler.
Yes, it's my stapler.
Have you seen it?
Have you seen my stapler? I told them that I'm gonna burn the place down. Anyway, we're not here for Office Space. That's probably a couple years from now. I forget what year that is, but was that 99?
Yeah, something like that. I think I'll double check. But
all right, so we got a demi decade until that one comes up.
Why I ever doubt? Of course, it was 99.
I don't remember my family's names, but I do remember what year movies came out.
Something had to make space for all that random nonsense.
It's the important stuff, you know. It's at some point I may remember the names of my seven children. We're here at the 30-something movie podcast.
You gotta work on some more children. Unless there's something about you I don't know, and I don't know if I wanna.
The important thing here is,
it was my understanding that there would be no math.
There it is. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our mantra.
Yeah. Subtitle to the podcast. I was happy to see that made it into the lyrics of the song too. That was
outstanding.
That was very close. Sometimes when you collaborate with AI, you never quite know what you're going to get.
Speaking of another mantra of the podcast,
it's like a box of chocolates.
Sometimes when you win,
yeah,
you lose.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of losing before we came up with the rendition of the song that was featured at the beginning of this recording. So our faithful listeners can let us know if you like it or not. If you don't like it, I don't know. We might keep it. If you do like it, you can let us know, and that would be
nice. Yeah, definitely.
We have very fragile egos. Frankly, what I'm trying to say here is Bo and I are just a couple of fragile heavenly creatures.
wonderful segue into this evening's discussion.
Yeah.
The riveting tale of...
Rode that segue right into a wall. Yeah. Which is probably what would happen if I ever tried to ride a segue.
Yeah, you know, I've looked at those and I'm like, God, that'd be fun. No, I think it'd be deadly.
I was told when I don't know if I told the story or not, when I was in Austin, and they have so many of the little electric scooters and electric bikes and everything else, I was like, hey, you know what? I to get from this conference to the taco place I want to go to, it's like 3/4 of a mile. I mean, I can walk it because I had walked it pretty much every other day. But I was like, there's so many of these bikes and scooters all over the place. Why don't I just rent one of these little electric scooters and I can zip down there and get my tacos and zip on back and it'll be nice and easy. And so I knew and trusted the opinion of and knew what my lovely wife was going to say. So I called my sister and I said, what do you think about this? And she was just like, okay, let me ask you maybe 2 questions, but let's start with 1. Look around you. What are the average ages of the people riding the scooters around you?
Good question.
Okay. Yeah, but she's like, no. Okay, now question 2. You have a funeral to go to tomorrow with the rest of your family. How stupid are you going to look if you land on your face and show up to the funeral with a completely broken face? Okay, all right. You're batting 1,000 here. I'm all right. Fair enough.
Did she hit you with these questions 3?
Yeah, no, it didn't have to be 3. At that point, I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't fit in with the 20-somethings that are all riding the scooters, and would I potentially fall on my face and look like I had been curb-stomped? Yes.
The percentages were high for that eventuality.
To quote K2SO, it's high. It's very high. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did not partake of the electric scooters, but...
I think you made the right choice.
I wanted to be adventurous.
I can also see the allure.
Yeah.
I still think you made the right choice.
I agree. I mean, I don't want to be boring. I don't want to, you know. Yes, I made the right choice. We'll leave it at that. We're here for Heavenly Creatures, if we haven't already figured it out. We're here for Heavenly Creatures. I am, if you don't know who we are, because this is your first time here. First of all, apologies. Second of all, I am John, sometimes also referred to as the Defender of the Filth because of my enjoyment of terrible, terrible movies, unlike Point Break, which I absolutely hate. With me...
Hey, Utah!
Give me two. I enjoy Point Break. I just have issues with the end. That's okay. Unlike Pat, which, you know, he hates everything. Bo is here with me this evening. Pat is not. We will say, before I ask you how you're doing, we will say we do hope Pat is doing well. He was a bit under the weather, and I know he was also staying with a family member who had been going through some health stuff as well, so we hope Pat is doing fine. We hope his family is doing well. So we miss you, Pat. I know he's listening to this because he's going to want to know what we thought of this movie. I have a feeling I know what Pat thought of this movie, but so we miss you, buddy. Bo, how are you doing?
I am well. And
how are you doing after you watch this movie?
Disturbed. Uh-huh. Just processing some of it, you're like, wow.
But Bo, some of the reviews say that it's a beautiful work of art.
Yeah, I don't see it. I you know, we've talked a lot lately about how we are just not the audience for some movies.
Sure, yeah.
This is, I think, an instance of that.
Yeah.
It's just not, certainly not in my wheelhouse movie-wise. It didn't really peg the needle for me to go see it. This was my first viewing.
Sure, yeah.
And yeah, I think, you know, we all like to watch things that make you think. We all like to watch things that, you know, we don't want to be in our filter bubble. We want to see other things.
Sure.
But I definitely think I was not the audience for this movie.
Yeah.
And not in a, you know, not in a bad way. I don't see it, but others may. So.
Yeah.
Comment, tweet, or X. I don't even know what we're calling that anymore. Is that bad?
No, it's fine.
call the, if you go to our website, call the voicemail line and tell us what is it about this movie that does it for you?
Yeah. I will say, going down the list of Peter Jackson's other movies that he's done, honestly, I haven't seen his earlier movies. So as of right now, this will be the earliest movie of his that I've seen. And then just, what, 15-ish years later is when, not 15, what is it, seven years later.
Seven,
yeah. It was my understanding there would be no math.
Exactly.
7 years later.
Strike that, reverse it.
Yeah. 7 years later, he would do Lord of the Rings.
Right, which is an epic tale of
and that's where of, I know him from. I know him from
right.
from 2001 until 2004. Is it 2004, 2003 when Return of the King came out? Those are the ones I know him for. And then obviously when he did the Hobbit movies later on, I know him from those. I don't really think, other than King Kong.
That Beatles thing that he did is pretty cool.
I still haven't watched that one yet. It did look pretty cool. I want to see that.
He's very like. It's funny, like when you think about this being a Peter Jackson, you can see that. You can see his style developing in these early movies.
Yeah.
He has a way of adapting stories to film that is very good. Give him a solid tale and he will put it on screen and he will make it the way it should be on screen. I mean, we've all seen book story adaptations that don't live up to the source material. There's one thing you got to give him, like he will do that. And I think the positive reviews that exist of this film are a testament to that.
Yeah.
They're a testament to him taking this material and putting it on screen in a way that conveys all the power that's part of that story just didn't work for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other one, I was looking down his list of stuff. The other one I absolutely want to see is They Shall Not Grow Old. The one where he colorized the footage from World War One.
Yes.
Yeah. I still want to see that one. That one had been on my list and I just almost forgot about it until I saw it just now. Yeah,
that's right. He did Mortal Engines, West of Memphis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. And then you add in the stuff he produced, not just the stuff he directed. And he's been a part of some really interesting projects.
Yeah. All right. Well, so tonight for us, you might be listening to this other times during the day. But for this one,
we're sun's out, mowing your lawn. I'm talking to you, Val.
You could be Val Kilmer, could be mowing his lawn. Could be middle of the night. And his mowing is long. I mean, maybe that's how you avoid the paparazzi.
I suppose, but I've tried to cut my lawn in the dark. It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, my snowblower has lights. Why doesn't my lawnmower?
That's not a bad idea.
Why don't One of the reasons is probably, well, I have a hunch on that. Well, but
even vacuum cleaners have lights, so they have headlights.
Right. Mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that would be just catnip to them.
We got
to
get one of those. Pick on my son just a little bit here because we have an electric mower, but it's not a cordless electric mower.
Oh, so
I would like at some point to get a cordless electric mower, but when he was referring to this, because he used to mow the lawn, and when he would be referring to this, he meant to say cordless, but he kept calling it Bluetooth. He's like, we got to get one of those Bluetooth mowers.
That's hysterical.
I said, what are you, because you're trying, to play music?
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I'd love to get a Bluetooth mower. That'd be great. You can play some music while you're mowing and
I want
take your phone calls.
The Roomba mower, the robot one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I bet he is Bluetooth.
They've got the local library here has one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
Little dudes out there, mowing all over the place,
That is outstanding.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this one came out on November 16th, 1994, rated R, with a runtime of 1 hour 39 minutes, directed by Peter Jackson, who did Lord of the Rings movies and King Kong. Writers were Fran Walsh and Peter Jackson, again, Lord of the Rings and The Lovely Bones. Producers were Jim Booth and Peter Jackson, did Forgotten Silver and The Frighteners. Composer was Peter Dasent, who did Brain Dead and Meet the Feebles. Cinematographer was Alan Bollinger, who did Meet the Feebles and The Frighteners. So a lot of folks working together here. Editor was Jamie Selkirk, who did Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and King Kong. Production company was Peter Jackson's Wingnut Films. Estimated budget was 5 million New Zealand, and the worldwide box office was approximately $5.4 million. Flick Metrics gives it a 79%, which is actually fairly high for a Flick Metrics. CinemaScore did not have a score for this one. Melanie Lynskey plays Pauline Parker. She was in Sweet Home Alabama and Up in the Air. Kate Winslet was Juliet Hulm. She was in Titanic and The Reader. Sarah Pierce played Honora Parker Reaper. She was in The Piano and An Angel at My Table. Diana Kent was Hilda Hulm. She was in The Wings of the Dove and An Ideal Husband. Clive Merrison was Dr. Henry Hulm. He was in The English Patient and Saving Grace. Simon O'Connor was Herbert Reaper. He was in Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and King Kong. Jed Brophy was John/Nicholas. He was in The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, and District 9. Peter Elliott was Bill Perry. He was in Bridge to Terabithia and 30 Days of Night. And Gilbert Goldie played Dr. Bennett. He was the world's fastest Indian and King Kong. A couple little trivia things here. The film has been noted for its historical accuracy. Historical, that's easy for me to say. Historical accuracy. In not literary or linguistic accuracy on the part of the host, in portraying the events that led up to the notorious 1954 Parker Hulm murder case in Christchurch, New Zealand. So this is a true crime story, just not one that we would be as familiar with because it took place in New Zealand in the 1950s. So it, in terms of that,
like, crazy keys.
Right. In terms of that, as I'm watching the movie, I am thinking, okay, well, I mean, the interesting part of this, whether I like the movie overall or not, it was interesting because it did teach me about a news item that I was not aware of. Like, I did not know about this, and so that to me is always interesting to learn a little bit more about something when there's a fictional telling of, you know, a true crime story or something to take the Law and Order phrase ripped from the headlines. Peter Jackson used a combination of life-size puppets and digital effects to create some of the fantasy sequences.
Which, super cool.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about those as we get on. But, yeah, that was probably one of the more interesting parts of the movie, were some of those kind of fantasy segments of Borovnia or Borovina.
I forget
the name of their like fictional land was called.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it real quick. But yeah, just the way I just love the look. There it is.
Yeah,
I love the look of those soldiers. Yeah. Like all the little characters, the clay characters, mm-hmm. just looked so good. Which, you know, Peter Jackson. That is not surprising.
Yeah, they're like giant living chess pieces. Let's see what else we got in terms of the trivia. We've got this was kind of the, you know, as this film was released internationally, it was kind of the breakthrough for Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey. Both pretty relatively unknown at the time. Very weird to think that just a couple years later is when Kate Winslet is going to do Titanic.
When she's queen of the world?
Mm-hmm. Right. The movie is also filmed at many of the actual locations where the real life events took place. So I'm sure that kind of added a layer of authenticity to it. And I'm sure it was something that was affecting for, you know, the cast and crew that worked on it, especially if this is a very famous murder case in New Zealand. All right, quick synopsis for this one. In a world where fantasy collides with harsh reality, Pauline and Juliet, two imaginative teenage girls, forge an unbreakable bond. As their dreams spiral into darkness, their friendship pushes them beyond the boundaries of sanity. Can love survive when it's built on a crime?
They were two young girls living in a world of imagination.
I'm going to the fourth world. It's an absolute paradise of music, art, and pure enjoyment.
What they had was friendship.
What a disgrace you are.
Your mother is rather a miserable woman.
What they needed was freedom.
Do you like your mother?
No.
What they shared was a secret.
Your daughter's been behaving in a rather disturbed manner.
What's she done?
I think I'm going crazy.
I'm sure it's perfectly innocent.
The crime that shocked the nation.
People die every day.
Only the best people fight against all obstacles in pursuit of happiness.
Forethought it up.
Aren't you clever?
We're not going to be separated.
I hate you!
She's uncontrollable.
Based on a true story.
It's all frightfully romantic.
Heavenly creatures.
The way they use the song selection as like a total counterpoint to the weird stuff that's going on is very good also. Just that whole, yeah.
Yeah. So a couple quick things about this one. I mean, in terms of the kind of the major moments of this, we've condensed this down into 10 major moments to kind of give you a quick overview of what's going on in the movie. And as I'm thinking about the major moments, I mean, there are interjections of some kind of trippy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the movie goes on, we do kind of get lost more and more in their imagination and what's going on with them. And
well, and I think obviously that's, you know, to show us as we're into it more because they are,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're spending more time in their fantasy world, which is going to lead up to some crazy stuff. And so that helps us. I don't want to say understand them because that's not a thing, but
it's potentially going to lead to murder.
Soundboard is humming tonight, folks.
I always enjoy it when we get a good movie that features murder, because then I can use that.
Mm-hmm.
I always love a good murder, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. A real quick side note. My sister and I went to go see a movie the other night. It was the Abigail movie.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen any previews for that? Okay.
I feel like I have, yes.
Slight spoiler, if you haven't seen any previews, if you're interested to go see this, maybe like fast forward ahead by like a minute or so, and I'll be done talking about it.
Clicks on your podcatcher, you should be good.
Yeah, a couple clicks on there, and move forward about a minute and a half or so. So basically, premise of the movie is this team of people kidnap this little girl who's a little ballerina. She's probably about 10 years old or so, and they're going to extort her father for money to return her. And they end up, like, whoever set up this job for them, they end up in this, like, old mansion in the middle of nowhere. And they've got her tied up and everything else. And all of a sudden, the house locks down. None of them can get out. And they find out that this little, like, 10-year-old girl is a centuries-old vampire that lured them all there so she could eat them.
Outstanding.
It was hilarious. And I don't mean that it was intended as a comedy movie, because it certainly was not. But this is one of those times where my sister and I, as we're watching this movie, particularly when, and this will be a slight spoiler, there is a scene, and she's not the only vampire that ends up in this movie. There is a scene where a vampire gets exposed to sunlight and just explodes. And
it's...
Yes, and vampires. But the explosion is just messy. Just so very, like Evil Dead 2 messy is what we're talking about here.
Oh, right on.
And my sister and I are just howling with laughter as this is happening. And that's when I always get concerned. I'm like, I need to look around to the other patrons here in the movie theater and see if we're just insane. And I look around, everybody else doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, good, we're with our people.
Nice when you're in a room with like-minded folk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't, that kind of mindset, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but.
Well, that's fair.
When you get that many together. Then. But yes, so that was a fun one. We start off with a new friendship being forged in 1952 in Christchurch. Juliet is a 13-year-old English girl, and she befriends Pauline. She's just moved and started school at the same school. She is a 14-year-old from a working-class family, and they bond over kind of their shared history of some childhood disease and isolation, and they start to form what will become a very intense friendship, and possibly more. Bit of a hostile relationship between Pauline and her mother, leading her to spend more and more time at Juliet's house with Juliet's family, her parents, where she feels more accepted and more comfortable. The girls start to create this elaborate fantasy world called Barovnia, And that kind of becomes the setting of the adventure novels that they're writing about the royal family of Barovnia and kind of what's going on with them. And some of their teachers are getting upset because they think that they're writing stories about the British royal family, and that's not proper. You can't do that kind of stuff. And over time, as they're creating more and more of this world, Juliet introduces Pauline to the idea of the fourth world, which in her mind is a fantastical heaven without Christians. And that is kind of the building of their shared worldview that they have. And it's all about, I guess, because in her mind, Christians hate art and they hate creativity and everything else. So that's why there are none of them there, because this will be a place all based on science and art and creativity and writing and all kinds of wonderful things. I just got excited because when I hear Fourth World, I think of DC Comics Fourth World, which includes the characters of Darkseid and the New Gods and Desaad and Granny Goodness, and there's some Superman in there. Some Jimmy Olsen was featured in some of those stories. So like some of the villains that we saw in the Justice League movie from a few years ago. And that's where I get excited, because when I hear Fourth World, that's what I think about. So unfortunately, they did not show up in this movie.
No, you didn't see anybody like that.
I mean, it would have been fun, but...
Right?
Not that he couldn't have thrown him in there. I mean, with the effects that they did and the crazy terracotta warriors later, that absolutely could have been.
Indeed.
Well, let's see. We have as they are kind of working through and creating this fourth world, during a trip, Juliet's parents announce that they are intending to travel and leave her behind. Juliet is kind of devastated by this, and Juliet has a vision of the fourth world and kind of invites Pauline into the spiritual realm where they believe that they can find peace. And there's the thought that then they can travel together to this place, and then they start to kind of interact with these stone chess piece looking kind of warriors and court jesters and all kinds of different characters. But that's everyone there kind of looks like that except for them. Juliet is diagnosed with tuberculosis and sent to a clinic. She and Pauline are writing to each other, assuming the roles of Barovnia's royal couple. Pauline begins a relationship with a lodger, which makes Juliet jealous, but they kind of continue to nurture their fantasy escape world. And Pauline is going to get in trouble here in just a little bit with that relationship with the lodger that's staying at her parents' house. The doctor then, Juliet returns from the clinic, and their relationship and bond intensifies even more. Juliet's father kind of voices some concerns to Pauline's parents, who take Pauline to a doctor. The doctor diagnoses Pauline as being homosexual, linking her condition to dramatic weight loss and being angry at her mother. Juliet's parents plan to divorce, and they kind of announce this, and they're going to leave Christchurch, intending to send Juliet to South Africa to stay with another family member. She's devastated at the thought of this separation and being separated from Pauline. The girls kind of consider running away, but ultimately they decide that instead of running away, instead of doing all this other stuff, best idea is to kill Pauline's mother. Because
definitely the first thing I always think of.
Right. I mean, that's usually when I'm trying to come up with something, that's usually at the very least plan B, if not C. You know, rarely is it any lower on the list than that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like at work. I mean, we're distributing devices to students. We're getting the iPads out to the new students, and I'm thinking through stuff, and I'm like, okay, with working with the tech team here, we can do this. We can distribute the devices to the students or murder.
Murder. Yeah. Definitely murder.
So, I mean, that's always a viable backup plan to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take the family to Disney World or murder.
Murder.
I did want to, we always tend to give a shout out to Greatest Generation in our shows because we love them. One of my favorite phrases that always comes up when they talk about destruction happening on a starship is the concept of girder murder.
Girder murder.
I do love a good girder murder every now and then in Star Trek. Have you noticed, this is a tangent, but have you noticed in all the new Star Trek, we don't really get the girder murder? And we don't even really get the sparking of the... What I'm wanting to know is there's not really sparking of the... Or exploding of the consoles. But they now have flamethrowers in the walls?
Yes.
What's flames going on with the flamethrowers in the walls?
And I believe that all the floors are equipped with ejector seat-style panels that fly people over consoles even more. But you are right. There is less sparking. So, you know, maybe
I'm noticing the bridge is a lot like a Kiss concert.
Redid some wiring. Yeah. Added, you know, they redirect all of the energy to the flamethrowers.
Right.
Maybe, you know.
I feel like the
safety valve. That way you know where the flamethrowers are as opposed to your panel sparking in front of your face. Maybe.
Right, right. I mean, when I imagine a post-scarcity future, it was not that it was post-scarcity of flamethrowers and pyrotechnics.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so during their final days together, Juliet and Pauline spend the last 3 weeks together at Juliet's house. When Pauline returns home, they kind of finalize their plan to murder her mother, seeing her as the primary obstacle to their continued friendship and their ability to be together. On a trip to Victoria Park, the girls walk with her along a path. They deliberately drop a pink charm, and when she bends to pick it up, they bludgeon her to death with a brick that was placed inside of a stocking. Lovely little family walk.
As you do.
As you do when you're walking through the park. Shortly after the murder, they are arrested. They are sentenced to 5 years in prison due to their age and released separately in 1959 on the condition that they never see each other again. And we go to the credits. And awkward that we immediately jump to ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-
I think in this movie, like all of the music choices in this movie were interesting. They were so divergent from the themes and the tone of what you were watching that it took you a minute to kind of register some of it.
Let's dig a little deeper into the music here and some of the other stuff.
And now, deep thoughts.
I have an opinion on this matter.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
I like it a lot.
Wow. It's very deep. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about your thoughts there on the music. Because the music was an interesting
Just
choice.
A Closer Walk with Thee is, you know, first up. And you don't know that things are going to get crazy when they play that one because it's early in the movie.
Well, and the irony that when they take her out to kill her, it's to go on a walk with her.
Nice Closer Walk with Them. You know, you get the how much is that doggy in the window mm-hmm. bit. You've got all the opera because they're playing the albums. Mario Lanza, right?
You got the funiculi funicula.
Yeah.
And the donkey serenade.
Yeah, the donkey serenade. It just kept getting weirder, and then you'll never walk alone. Mm-hmm. It was, and the way they placed them, it was like at some of the weirdest moments they would drop in this ballad, and you're like, "What is happening here?" And the music they chose for the fantasy world was definitely on purpose. I mean, it was definitely designed to make you feel. Wait a minute, what's happening now? Yeah. All of a sudden, the I can't remember if it was the nurse or a doctor or somebody who had the, it looked like the sword blade was coming up through his chest. Mm-hmm. That was really cool looking, but it was also odd.
Yeah, I was half expecting, with the other choices, I was half expecting, I was like, well, if the time period was a little different, we might get a little, don't stand so close to me. Might get a little hit me with your best shot. I mean, Pat Benatar, I think, would have been a great choice.
There you go.
This one, yeah. Yeah. We do a rendition of a Shot Through the Heart, but Bricked in the Head.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's still rock and roll to me.
Mm-hmm. Another Brick in the Wall. That'd been a good one.
There it is.
Yeah. She's a brick house.
Ooh.
She's a brick head. She's mighty, mighty.
No, she has a brick in her head.
She's got a brick in her head. Mighty, mighty. She's on the ground. She's dead. She's got a brick in her head. Yeah. It's a very musical. I feel like this is a very musical podcast tonight.
I think so.
I made a choice. It was either try a New Zealand accent, no, or sing songs.
No.
So I went the route. I woke up and chose violence this morning.
I think you offend less people with the singing than you would with the New Zealand accent.
That is probably true.
Yeah.
Speaking of offending people, as of today, I did see that we are number 35 in Sweden.
Wow.
That's what I say to our Swedish listeners. And thank you. I think that means thank you all the times I listen to the Swedish show.
Well, if it doesn't, whatever.
If it doesn't, I apologize. And no, that's not how much your meal will cost. I don't know what I just said. The bathroom is 3/4 of a kilometer that way. I never took Swedish, so I don't know.
Yeah. No idea.
The movie, in terms of deep thoughts here, again, I think we both said we had never seen this one before. And I, as much as I'll say I appreciated this movie for the true crime story that it was telling, I don't think that this definitely wouldn't be one of my go-to movies. It was an interesting story.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to watch it again. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciated having seen it, and especially to be able to get to see an early example of Peter Jackson's work. I get to see that. And there was stuff like the fantasy sequences. Early Kate
Winslet, you know.
Yeah, like the fantasy sequences were fun. Even the fantasy sequences themselves got a little awkward at some point when the, you know, like when a trip to China goes bad and all of a sudden your terracotta warriors are wanting to have amorous Congress. That's where things get a little awkward. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, taking a roll in the terracotta. It was a little strange. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yes. Strange was definitely the name of the game watching this one. Like every time you thought and kind of had it figured out, they would definitely throw you a curveball, not knowing much about the story itself. I'm curious how much of that fantasy world was part of the original story and how much it was them taking some artistic license to try to show the thoughts these girls had.
Right. And I mean, that's the other part of it is, like, what is the message we're taking away from this? Is that they were slowly descending into madness, and that's why they did it? And does that make them less culpable because they were children and they were, I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, and then you start to look at the distant parents and so much.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They just left her in Bermuda while she convalesced and they were off doing their thing. Like not Bermuda, the Bahamas.
Yeah.
They're both in the Beach Boys song. It's fine. It's just odd. Like, you know, you talk now like a local story here. The parents of the parade shooter got some charges because they helped him get the gun. Like, you know, when is it all on you, and when is it on, you know? Is it nature or nurture? That's what I was struggling with. There we go.
Right. Yeah.
Yep, it's late, folks. and then you have the other parents that weren't distant, but obviously didn't understand or want to understand their child. And this is why I would love to have heard Pat's take on this.
Right, yeah.
So, Pat, leave us a message. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. And I wonder if part of my issue is I just didn't unpack it fast enough. Mm-hmm.
So a couple of other interesting things. I did not mention this in the trivia when I had shared the trivia stuff before. But I guess a couple of the different pieces on this, when they did try to plead insanity, like the actual girls tried to plead insanity. And they did so unsuccessfully, which in the trivia here mentions that was probably actually a good thing for them personally, because I think Peter Jackson himself said this, that, you know, at the time, if you were acquitted on an insanity plea, then a lot of times you were institutionalized and given a lobotomy. So it probably mm-hmm. worked out better for them that they did not get the insanity plea. And then they did only serve the 5 years. And then after that, they, you know, were sent away as long as they agreed never to see each other ever again. I guess Juliet, and that was her real name, Juliet Holm. I think I'm saying that right. Was discovered to be, I guess she revealed this many years later. She became an author and took the name Anne Perry. And so she had been an author and lived out the rest of her life. And I guess when they tried to track down Pauline, they found out that Pauline, what did I find here? In 1997, Pauline, because when they were making this, they were trying to track down, you know, the actual people. And I think it was in 1994 when Anne Perry revealed that she was Juliet. And then in 1997, they tracked down Pauline to a rundown cottage on a farm in England where she had run a children's horse riding school. And she had taken on a different name. Excuse me. Yeah, I get all choked up about it. She had taken on a different name. She'd become a devout Catholic and basically had devoted her life to handicapped children. So clearly they went on after all of this to, you know, take on these new identities and live out their lives, but you know, obviously you're
bludgeoning, interesting, you're a new identity,
and that's
a way to reinvent yourself.
I guess so. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I guess they did a lot of research in this. Like he had read Pauline's diary. Peter Jackson had read Pauline's diary, and one of the interesting takes on this was he didn't want to do a movie that was kind of a documentary of the crime, but instead about their very intense relationship. And so that's why I think we get we get those fantasy sequences where he's just really trying to get into their mind and find mm-hmm. out, well, why did they build this intense relationship? Why did they build this fantasy world? You know, what was that all about? And it really is. I mean, you really don't get any sense that there's going to be a killing at the end of this movie until you're probably a good, what, 2/3 of the way through?
Yeah, really, until she starts saying things like, I wonder what would happen if Mummy died.
Right, yeah.
Then you're like, oh, okay.
Well, that escalated quickly.
Right? And then you think more about it. You're like, no, it really didn't escalate that quickly, yeah. But it felt like it did.
This had been coming for a while. So, overall, interesting movie. Interesting movie with some interesting musical choices, some very eclectic musical choices. If you like Mario Lanza, then you're going to love the soundtrack of this one.
Right.
But, yeah.
Eclectic's a good way to look at the whole movie, really. Like, just goofy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you want to check out some early Peter Jackson, I'd say this is one definitely to check out because it'll kind of give you a sense of, you know, his filmmaking style. And, I mean, you do see some, when you have these fantasy sequences, you do get some flashes of, well, here's where some of the Lord of the Rings stuff is going to come in. Here's what it's going to look like when he has the opportunity mm-hmm. to do a fantasy movie at that point. And we kind of joked early on, and maybe even before we were recording, we're like, how did just a few years later they peg the person who made this movie to do Lord of the Rings? But this movie is highly regarded in New Zealand. It seems to be highly regarded by a lot of other reviewers. So I would imagine they probably did. They probably looked at this and they're like, well, if he can take the diary of these kids and really turn it into a character-based story about their relationship, but also get some like wacky, crazy fantasy sequences in there and balance those pretty well, sure, maybe this is who you give Lord of the Rings to.
Mm-hmm. A faithful adaptation. Yeah. That is certain.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about this one before we jump into three questions?
No, I think, you know, if you're a true crime fan, see it. This is a good early example. My lovely wife happens to love true crime. I don't know if she's seen this, but I have a hunch she has. But if not, I'm going to tell her to give it a shot. I think she would probably like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also be remiss in stating, because I always like to use this whenever I can, is that they did, at some point in the movie, call themselves Heavenly Creatures.
He said it!
I wanted to make sure that was that was established and recorded for my posterior.
So it is written, so let it be done.
So say we all.
Indeed.
He asks each traveler three questions.
It's impossible to answer.
Impossible because you don't know the answer.
Nobody could answer that question.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
All right. Three questions. Question number one, who are your favorite fictional BFFs in a film, show, or book?
You really pulled no punches with these.
No, I know.
I've always struggled with the, you know, the BFF definition. Like, you know, I think buddy cop movies, I think Lethal Weapon, I think Briggs and Murtaugh, but then I go, they're not really BFFs till like a fourth movie, because it's always this begrudging friendship, right? Mm-hmm. So then I try to think about it a little more, and I was like, well, you know, these were two young women. I started to think, okay, maybe like Clueless. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, but that's too on the nose. And then it hit me. True best friends forever. When Harry met Sally. Mm-hmm. Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan as Harry and Sally. I think that's like people that meet, become friends, are in each other's lives forever. That one.
Yeah. And then people are so inspired that they want to order the same food that they had too.
Exactly. I'll have what she's having.
Mm-hmm. My answer for this one, originally I was trying to think through, I'm like, do I go Bill and Ted? Do I do that? And that was kind of one of my first thoughts. I was like, yeah, Bill and Ted could be a good one.
Plenty time.
But then I kind of thought a little bit further about it and like, you know what? We're on the other side of the pond for this movie. So I want to stick with the other side of the pond. And I had actually been out somewhere at a store checking on like DVDs and Blu-rays, like old, it was like a used bookstore type thing. And they had a bunch of DVDs and Blu-rays. And I had picked up some copies of Red Dwarf on DVD that I was trying to get my physical collection of Red Dwarf together and was enjoying that. And I came across, and I did not pick them up. I probably should have, because I remember enjoying this show so much when I lived over in England, because it was just hilarious. That could sum up most of the stuff I watched when I was a kid. Not appropriate for maybe a 12 to 13-year-old to watch, but I think this is a great
example.
And here
I thought you were going to say Wallace and Gromit.
No, not Wallace and Gromit. This would be a very weird version of Wallace and Gromit. I'm going to go with Patsy and Adina on Absolutely Fabulous.
I love it.
Because that show was so much fun.
Oh my God. I haven't thought about that show in a long time.
My formative, you know, preteen teenage years were Red Dwarf and Ab Fab.
Wow.
That might explain a lot, things. Actually.
Yeah, kind of does. You said Bill and Ted. You know who I didn't think about that I should have?
Is that?
Wayne and Garth,
yeah.
Goose.
There's a lot of good BFFs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, question number two. Favorite, Pat would probably reject this question.
I think so.
What are your favorite murderous children in fiction?
I had to spend a little time trying to think if my favorite one actually did any murder.
Yeah.
I don't think he did, so I had to take him off my list, but I was thinking of Problem Child.
Oh, yeah.
But now, I don't think he killed anybody.
No, I think that was PG rated, so he probably didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
I mean,
which
he, well, actually, no, I'm sorry, I take that back. He killed a box office.
That's true.
Because those were awful.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. He might have killed some careers.
Yeah. John Ritter got work after that.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
But so I had to think a little more after I realized he probably hadn't killed anybody. Mm-hmm. But then I came up to, I came up with one that, we just watched, The Good Son.
Okay. Yeah. Little Macaulay Culkin action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was going to be my one. There were some other honorable mentions, but that was, was where I ended up. I think the line from Problem Child to Macaulay Culkin is short.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to think through, I probably just need to go with the classic and the movie that terrified me the first time I watched it and the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time I watched it. I'm going to go with The Exorcist.
There you go.
Because Reagan is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I made a choice. The first time I watched that movie, I was like, you know what? I'm old enough. Well, no, I wasn't. But I'm going to say I'm old enough to watch this movie now.
You felt that you were of age.
I did. And I rented it either from Blockbuster or from the library. And I made a conscious choice. I was like, you know what? I'm going to set the mood here. I'm going to rent this movie. I'm going to go watch it down in the basement. And I'm going to turn off all the lights and sit and watch it by myself. Ooh. And I'm going to wait until midnight to start it.
Oh.
So I purposely.
So you were just.
Oh.
Standing in front of the mirror saying Bloody Mary all night long.
Huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's gutsy. I don't think I could have done that. Me, who famously went home from a sleepover because he was terrified of gremlins.
Oh, yeah.
Growing up. So, yeah. You know, I'm not exactly the poster child for horror.
No, it would not have been a choice you would have made.
No.
Yeah, I made that choice. That was also when the movie was over. I just kind of sat there for a bit, and I was like, huh. All right. I'm not going to get up right now, but at some point I'm going to have to get up because this VHS is going to end, and that's then going to automatically start. It's going to stop, and then it's going to rewind itself. And as soon as that does, somehow the VHS player that we had was such that when the tape hit it went back to the beginning again, it then shut off the VCR. And I believe then by shutting off the VCR, the screen just went black on the TV. So I knew at some point the whole room was just going to go dark.
Yeah.
And I did sit there and I did wait and it did rewind itself all the way back, switched it off. Everything went dark. I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just going to leave the TV on and I'm going to sprint up to my room. And unfortunately, I had chosen to watch this down in the basement, which meant my room was on the second floor of the house. So I
that
don't
was quite
know.
Quite the sprint.
What I would have loved is I would have loved all those stupid times that I did not make my mile and a half time in football conditioning every year in high school. Had I been able to take the speed at which I made it from that basement sitting in front of the TV to up two flights of stairs to under my covers, pulled over my head. Usain Bolt has not moved that fast. Let's just put it that way. I made excellent time getting up those two flights of stairs. I think I probably took them like three steps at a time. I was like, nope, go, yep, no, nope, I'm done, out of here.
Surprised you didn't wake everybody up.
I might have. At that point, I didn't care.
That's fair.
So, but yeah, Exorcist. Exorcist is my horror podcast that I listen to from time to time. Whenever they review movies that have children featured into them, they always refer to them as, they refer to children as creepy crap bags.
I understand that sentiment.
I should have, maybe I should have worded this question as who's your favorite creepy crap bag? All right. Final question. What's your favorite Kate Winslet role?
I had seen surprisingly little of her work.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of shocked. I thought I'd seen more, but I did like her in, of course, now it is escaping me. I got to take better notes. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is the earliest movie of hers that I had seen. I don't think I'd seen any other.
I liked her in Eternal Sunshine and Spotless Mind.
Yeah. Before this, the earliest movie of hers I had seen was when she was played Ophelia in Kenneth Branagh's
Hamlet. I was going to say Hamlet was good. The Holiday, she's in that with Cameron Diaz.
Is that the one with Jack Black?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But yeah, I was going down the list going, didn't see that, didn't see that, didn't see that. I'm like, oh dear. And it's funny because in my head, I think I like her as an actress, but it's funny because I haven't seen much.
Well, there's been some good stuff she's been in lately, like in the last few years or so. I believe, at least I remember hearing that she was.
Well, she was in the new Avatar.
Yeah, I remember hearing that she was really good in that Revolutionary Road movie that came out several years ago.
Mm-hmm. She's in the Regime miniseries that was just on.
You know, we started to watch that, and we didn't finish it.
I haven't started it. It's recorded, sitting on my DVR waiting because I was too addicted to Doctor Who.
No.
I have not watched anything that is recorded for me in the last, like, 2 months because I decided to start watching Doctor Who and loved it. So I've been on this binge craze. It's kind of funny. I have a free minute in front of the TV, go to HBO Max and watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, see, I need to get caught up. I kind of dropped off of Doctor Who, not for any particular reason, just other things, started watching other things and just got dropped off. And then all of a sudden I was like, wow, I'm too far behind now. I really got to dedicate getting back into it. I have not watched Doctor Who since I think there were a few episodes left of Peter Capaldi's run.
Okay.
So I'm
not as far behind as you think. You're not as far behind as you think. You're only one Doctor behind, I think.
Yeah.
Well, two now, because the new stuff starts in like a week.
Right. Yeah. Well, and
I'm actually coming.
That's true for my television viewing and my personal health, too.
Indeed. Yeah, the Jodie Whittaker stuff. I'm at the end of Jodie Whittaker's run now. Okay. I've got the four specials that they ran, and then the new stuff starts on May 10th. Okay. And then I get to go back to Tubi and start watching the classic stuff that I've never seen.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And I, except for a few here and there, I had a friend who was a huge Doctor Who fan when we lived in England. I never really could get into the old stuff too much, but I mean, I did pick it up when it was Christopher Eccleston.
That's where I started.
And I loved him.
That was sort of the consensus of everyone I talked to was they like start there and then go back and watch the classic stuff when you have time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like
some of it's like watching classic Star Trek. It's like you go back and you're like, ugh.
Well, and there's been so many episodes in the last from Capaldi on, there's been at least two or three episodes where they've brought back some of the old Doctors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, all right, now I got to go see this. Yeah. You know, and they brought back some of the old companions, and now the Sarah Jane Smith has her own spinoff.
Wow, okay.
And they've got a Torchwood spinoff with Captain Jack Harkness. So, I mean, I'm kicking myself for never watching it in the past.
Yeah.
So good. But I'm almost kind of sad because I'm caught up now, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
The binge watch is great, but sometimes it's harmful.
Yeah.
Because there's no mole.
Yeah. My Kate Winslet role, I mean, I'm looking back on the list here. Like, yeah, like I said, we started the Regime. I thought she was kind of funny. She was good in that. It just, I don't know. It was maybe a different kind. We like quirky, but it was like a different kind of quirky, and we gave it several episodes. Sure. I'm like, it's not clicking with us.
Noted.
But, you know, it definitely had some funny parts to it. And,
And I'll still watch it, but it might push it a little lower on the catch-up list, knowing that.
I would say, just from looking at her IMDb page, I'm probably going to go with Eternal Sunshine. You know, I did really like her in that one. Titanic. I thought she was great in Titanic. And she was great as Ophelia in Hamlet.
Yep.
So I might go Eternal Sunshine. The one that I have seen that is such a... Oh, it's a... It's a weird movie, and, you know, maybe it's one that you only watch with other people if you really think that the other people are going to be okay with this movie, too, and that is Quills. Have you ever seen Quills?
No.
Okay. I watched Quills because it had Jeffrey Rush in it.
Sure.
I mean,
that is
Right. The top three people are Jeffrey Rush, Kate Winslet, and Joaquin Phoenix.
I mean, that's,
great cast.
That's respectable.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of other people, too. Like, there's a lot of other people you'd look at. Oh, Michael Caine is in it, too. So, tons of other people. And other people you'd be like, oh, it's that guy. So, there's a lot of that guys in it. let's just say that the movie is about the Marquis de Sade. And let's just say there are some interesting scenes in the movie. It is definitely rated R. And while remaining a family-friendly podcast, I don't know that I can go into it much further.
Yeah, I'm watching the little trailer on the head of IMDb here, and yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Let's do it this way. Remember the comment I made about the awkward scene with the terracotta warriors in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that is posthumously. Let's put it that way.
I see.
Yeah. So I remember watching this movie thinking, oh man, I love Jeffrey Rush. He's awesome. And Kate Winslet's great. And Joaquin Phoenix and Michael Caine. And so I remember, you know, getting it to watch it. And I was like, well, and I love a period piece movie. And then I'm watching it going, I feel like I need to go take a shower now. So not, I mean, and not that story wise,
Jeffrey Rush too.
Story and acting wise, not a bad movie. It was very well done and well acted and everything else. But there were just a couple scenes I was like, meh, it's
kind of interesting when they choose to go down that road.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of choosing violence, at the end of this month, we're going to be watching the movie North.
Yes, we are.
So, we'll see how that goes.
Roger Ebert's favorite movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And look what it did to him. He's not alive anymore. So, so far this month has been Love and Family. We have, over on the Patreons, we have done Tammy and the T-Rex. You're all welcome. The Patreon short was The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, from 1994, an Aussie movie. So we've been all over the world in this month, kind of. Because then we started with Four Weddings and a Funeral, jumped back over for Reality Bites, then Heavenly Creatures. Next week we're going to be in Montana for Legends of the Fall. And then we're going to be all over the world in North at the end of the month. So it's an exciting time to be world travelers and still be sitting in front of our microphones, not going anywhere.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is fine with me because traveling is horrendous.
Right now, no thank you.
Airports and planes. Yeah. No.
I got places I want to go, but no, not... Not at the moment. I think I'm okay for
it. Yeah, I just did it going to Florida and back. It's barely worth the hassle getting there. You know, it's come on.
We had a bunch of travel in February and March, and then it was like the entire month. It felt like we were traveling the entire end of February, almost the whole month of March. It felt like.
Ugh.
And after that, I was like, you know what? I don't travel much for work or other things. I'm probably good for the rest of the year, at least.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay.
Yeah, the most traveling I want to do for work, I'm driving to the city for a meeting on Wednesday. I can do that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, no, that's
about all I got in me, though.
Not anything
I'm just
else.
Not,
thank you so much.
Part of it is I'm not built for travel.
Well, you know. Who is?
I like my comfort.
Yes.
And travel is not comfortable.
It's not comfortable. So, all right. Well, Bo, thank you for being here with me.
Thank you, John.
As always, we thank you all for being here. Thank you to our Patreon co-executive producers for your support, helping keep the lights on over here, keep the show running. Everybody else, thank you so much. When you put in the reviews on iTunes, that really helps, as well on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out. So thank you all so much. Thank you for being here. We'll be back here again next week for Legends of the Fall. And until then, be excellent to each other. Go watch some good movies, and we'll see you back here next time. Lightsabers clash, phasers set to stun. Action packed from dusk till dawn. We have deep thoughts and questions three. Come share our love of the movies we see. Life moves pretty fast. Some will fizzle and some movies last. I understood that.